Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Curzon Film Podcast. This week we are delving into the darkest depths of L for Paul Verhoeven's new film. And joining me are Daniela Verrick-Tanidi.
Hello.
And Jenna Hobbs.
Hiya.
And I'm Jake Cunningham. Thanks a lot for joining us. And so this film, directed by Paul Verhoeven, who you may know from Showgirls and Basic Instinct and RoboCop and Total Recall, is a return to his art house roots before Hollywood swept him up in the late 80s. He was well known for his Dutch kind of indie art house films, which he's then reverted back to at this later end of his career, L being a silver-haired highlight for him. Anyway, so I wanted to ask you guys to begin the conversation, which art house indie directors would you like to see reverse that role and in their careers go to Hollywood later on?
Okay, so I had a long think about this and I've decided upon a director. I'm going to go for Gaspar Noé. And now I was thinking about Love in 3D, which is I've seen now. Mm-hmm. And it's quite graphic.
It is.
And then I was thinking about a well-known franchise that's also not graphic enough, some might say. Gaspar Noé, 50 Shades, the final chapter.
That's really good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Thank you.
I mean,
I found, not to say that I'm the biggest 50 Shades person out there, but I think the issue with 50 Shades, for people that actually want erotic cinema, it never really gets there, does
it?
It's kind of just, it's a bit kind of sultry and a bit starey, but
and
never really
steamy.
Gets
steamy.
Yeah,
but it's not Love 3D.
Yeah, but my issue with Love 3D is that by the end of it, you're a bit sick of it.
Yeah,
I don't know how many more sex scenes I can take.
But you've got that, you know, core storyline from 50 Shades that people love that Gaspar Noé can turn his hand to.
And I think we have 100% chance in Gaspar Noé already enjoying 50 Shades of Grey. I'm sure he loves it.
Or hates it.
Oh, definitely he hates it.
Or thinks he could do a better job.
Oh, I bet he could. And I'm sure he would just say that I've already done that. I've done it. But I mean, we can all agree that the storyline in Love 3D is maybe not its strongest.
It's not its strongest selling point.
Yeah, but maybe that's true of 50 Shades of Grey as well.
50 Shades of Grey has a story that stole nations. Okay. People care about Anna and Mr. Grey.
Jamie Dornan.
Yeah, that's it.
Gaspar Noé's 50 Shades. That sounds great. Although, annoyingly, they've already shot the last one.
Oh,
so,
no.
But you know she wrote the prequel.
Oh, from the Grey perspective.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, that's where Gaspar Noé can shine.
Gaspar Noé's Grey. Mm-hmm. 3D.
3D, which is important, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And if we can get Jamie Dornan back and doing all the things that happen in Gaspar Noé films, mm-hmm. I'm sure the audiences would turn out for sure.
Exactly, and I think Jamie Dornan could afford to go more art house.
Oh, I think he needs to make some...
I think
some,
he'd love to.
I mean, Anthropoid was meant to be great, but no one really saw that. And he's got a film on Netflix, The Siege of Jadotesville, which kind of came and went and no one really saw. Mm. But I noticed it the other day. And because I think underneath all the stuff, when you look at The Fall, he's a good actor.
He is, yeah.
He could be really good. Maybe he needs to do... I think it would be easy for him, but he could easily do a superhero thing, and that would that would shift all the 50 Shades stuff.
I think it's time for him.
Yes, I think so too. I like him, yeah. Danny?
I'm going to go for Andrea Arnold, and I would like her to do a superhero film.
With Jamie Dornan?
Maybe. just because I'm a big fan of superhero films, but I seem to always be disappointed with the result. And I was thinking she could do something more of like The Misfits, you know, the TV series.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
So it's a bit more like gritty and based around characters rather than the superhero.
Yeah,
powers.
I think, I mean, you had some sense of that with Josh Trank's Chronicle as well, but that had the gimmick of being a handheld thing as well, which I wouldn't imagine Andrea Arnold doing. But I really like the idea of looking at superheroes through the characters rather than their actions, really.
Yeah, I would love to see that.
Yeah, and also you'd have her 4:3 aspect ratio.
Exactly.
Which would be really cool to see. I think that's what I'd want to see. Yeah, that would be wicked, particularly because obviously superheroes are very much a big part of American culture as well. Yeah. After American Honey, I'd almost like to see a big superhero film, but just with all the settings of American Honey, just keeping in all of those places.
Yeah,
and keeping Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, definitely.
You can't lose Shia.
No.
Excellent. Yeah, so actually, I got the thing that got me thinking, I thought we might touch on superheroes there because of Logan.
Yeah.
I think Logan is James Mangold directed Walk the Line a long time ago now, but it almost feels like he's gone back, he's stripped back a lot of stuff. He did Night and Day and The Wolverine, which I think, from judging from interviews that I've heard with him, was he... with Logan, he was getting sick of the intervention of big studios and distributors just telling him what to do, and he only agreed to do Logan if he could do it how they wanted to do it. And it is a very different superhero film, and I think that is someone who's done a almost Verhoeven-esque arc of smaller thing, got into the studio stuff and then got sick of their studio stuff and have somehow made an art house big film as well. And it's I'm not saying Logan's an art house film, but there's still stuff in there that makes it a lot different to a lot of Hollywood stuff.
Yeah.
For myself, I was thinking originally Lars von Trier, but then he did his twist on horror with Antichrist and a twist on the musical with Dancer in the Dark. And then we had Steven Soderbergh redid Tarkovsky's Solaris, which Jen did our podcast with Clooney.
Yes.
But ultimately, I think I'm going to go for David Lynch. So Lynch did Dune, which was a big blockbuster but was horrible, and the film that I was thinking of that made me think he could do something different was The Straight Story, which I don't know if you two have seen, but that's a very non-Lynchy Lynch film. So it's no Blue Velvet or Mulholland Drive where it's freaky and it's weird and it's horrible but compulsive. This is just a story about a guy who finds out his brother's dying and he can't drive, so he drives his lawnmower across the country to go and find him.
Okay.
And it's really, really lovely, and it's really human, and it's quite quiet, and it's slow, and it's really not a David Lynch film.
Mm.
But I thought of the... at the end of Avengers Age of Ultron, we see the Incredible Hulk fly off planet Earth, and we don't know where he's gone. And there's a Marvel storyline called Planet Hulk, where after that he actually goes to his own planet. And I thought I'd like to see a David Lynch Planet Hulk. And he's he's just there, and there's lots of isolation. And in it, like, it eventually turns into this kind of gladiator plot in the comics, but I'd like to spend kind of most of the time of just having Hulk wandering and just kind of exploring and looking solemn in a Lynch kind of way, but actually not making it too depressing as well, in that he can actually take out his anger here and there's no one to harm.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And he's got this dilemma of, like, he's incarcerated himself in some way, but then ultimately realises maybe he needs human interaction to be human.
That's a bit like The Little Prince.
Yeah, elements of The Little Prince in there, particularly just that idea of being on a planet by yourself. But then, obviously, final act, Gladiators.
Obviously.
Right, so where are we? Who's getting funded this week?
Oh.
What do we think?
I'm going to give my money to Danny.
I was going to go Gaspar Noé, 50 Shades. It's just too much of a perfect fit for me.
Okay,
I think it's lovely.
Yeah, I agree.
There we are.
Yes.
Well done, Jenna.
Oh, I'm on two now.
2 points. Nice. All right. So what started all that off was obviously Paul Verhoeven's return to art house. We had 2006's Black Book, and now we have Elle. And this film won the Golden Globe for foreign language film. It won Isabelle Huppert, Best Actress at the Golden Globes as well. We didn't see any of that in the Oscars, sadly. Not even a nomination for foreign language film. I should actually put out a trigger warning there. This is a film that deals a lot with sexual violence and rape, and we are going to be talking about those kind of things. And so do switch off now. That's absolutely fine. But the first scene of this film is Isabelle Huppert's character, Michelle, being raped by a masked man. Mm. And the film that you're expecting after that scene is not the film that we actually come to see.
Yeah, the opening is so graphic and brutal that you can only expect Michelle, the character, to then go on a journey of, you know, trying to come to terms with what's happened to her and feeling very kind of broken by that potentially. Mm-hmm. But the story you get is of her resilience and strength, and you just can't even imagine where it will go.
Yeah, it kept surprising me. Like, I thought it would go one way, and just it wasn't going anywhere where I thought it was going to be. And I think that's the big great thing about the film. It just surprises you, especially with the characters. And mm-hmm. stuff.
For the first half an hour, almost, she picks up her life as normal, as if it almost has never happened to her.
Yeah. And I think there's a really excellent scene, which may be one of the most comic scenes as well, because this has been touted since its premiere at Cannes last year as a rape revenge comedy, which is not three words that you ever expect to see next to each other. And so we see, obviously, we have this scene at the start, and then Michelle kind of just doing her day-to-day life, and then there's a dinner party with her friends, and she says, "So I think maybe I was raped."
Yeah, she says she was assaulted to begin with, and so it's quite unclear, and then it becomes more clear to her friends that it's a sexual assault. And, you know, they obviously have said to her, you know, "Are you calling the police? You know, what's going on?" And she tries to completely brush it off as if it's no big deal at all to them, and has even ordered champagne. And
Yeah, so she says that, and then champagne comes to the table, and one of her friends says, "I think we might need a few more minutes."
Yeah.
And I think that how those people feel is ultimately how the audience feel. I know that's how I felt, that she said it, and for me that was like, okay, so that did happen, because we've seen her, she's acting in a way as if it that nothing happened whatsoever until she says it at that moment, and it's like, okay, so yeah, that did happen. And because it was almost like it's a different film for that first half hour.
Yeah. And she seemed to like take everything like very responsibly. Like, I don't know, she changed the locks and she went to the doctor straight away, and that you kind of you see that in the first few scenes, and you see what sort of person she is at that moment. Like, she doesn't dwell on it at all, and that was confusing for me, because I was like, she went back to her house, and I'm like, I wouldn't be able to feel safe going back to that space. I'm like, and just sleeping there and being okay about it. And I know she's not completely okay about it, but also she seems... She's
a very, like, strong and resilient person. Yeah. And almost it's like she doesn't want to give what's happened to her the power to change the way she lives her life.
Yeah. And she's very methodical about everything. And as... So in the first act, you're kind of... never really in the film do you get a full sense of who Michelle is, but it's you're particularly aware of that in the first act, because you're still trying to figure out who this person must be if they're reacting in this kind of way. And then you do just start to think, why isn't she ringing the police? And then we get some information that I think plays in that is key for creating this character of Michelle is that her dad was a serial killer in the 1970s, and he killed a humongous amount of people along their street. And during all of this, the photograph was taken of Michelle kind of standing in front of the burnt bodies.
Yeah, or the burnt stuff.
Yeah.
That she was, so, and there's also kind of like, she wasn't involved, but there's a public perception that she was involved in what happened. And so I think she's had to live her whole life with this kind of guilt that A, this was her father, and B, that she was incriminated in some way. And, you know, she was the victim of that situation, really, that she had became the public... that photograph became the public face of that horrible atrocity.
Yeah.
That
and
committed.
To the public, she has been viewed as someone that has killed tens of people.
Mm.
And so she's lived her... well, the majority of her life like that. So then after what happens, after the rape... I think in some way she's thinking maybe like this is not the worst way that she's actually been perceived in her whole life.
Yeah, I think it feels very much like she's hit her capacity for grief. The way she talks about her father to her mother, the way she deals with that, is that she has no emotions left to give. She's done with that.
Mm.
And I think, yes, that plays definitely into the way that she can't go speak to the police, because she kind of thinks, like, all it will do is put her name back in the newspaper and this will all come up again. So it's easier for her to just try and bury it.
Mm.
I thought it was interesting, even her friend kind of, Anna, she kind of thought of her in the same way as everyone else did, because it was like that line of like, oh, you should talk to the police, you're the victim this time, because you shouldn't be thinking about the previous situation. And Michelle was like, no, I was a victim at that time as well, because that wasn't the truth.
Mm.
Very, very true. And I think one of the things that we see early on, because we see Michelle going to the doctor, as you said, and refitting the locks, but we never get a sense of her life beyond her house for a while and her domesticity, until we get to her workplace, which she founded with her friend Anna.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is a job that I was not expecting her to have whatsoever.
Yeah.
She is the co-owner and founder of a video games company.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. It's just very cool because it's just so unexpected.
Mm.
But that is introduced through the most horrible ogre sex scene that she is watching.
And that she's orchestrating as well. And she's telling the people that it doesn't go far enough.
Yeah. So like, we know what's happened in the first scene. And then she gets to work. And she says something along the lines of, the orgasmic convulsions are not strong enough. Wow, what a line. But just the fact, what a woman to be able to go to work and be able to separate everything like that and just say, no, this is my art, this is my work, this is my job, this is what I've made, and so I'm going to still make it how I think it needs to be made, regardless of what else is happening.
She's very good at compartmentalising her life, isn't she? And at work, you see her become... And actually, she always is very assertive. But at work, in that moment, you see her tell this group of guys that it's not good enough and, you know, they can't undermine her. And she really takes charge of that situation. And so then it kind of makes sense that if she's the kind of person that goes in and takes charge of this office, that she is the kind of person that's going to take charge of her experiences and take charge of her life as well.
Yeah, and because of the nature of that game and because of the nature of the video game as well, it's a male-dominant office as well.
Yeah.
And there is a few different male personalities in that office competing for attention, affection from Michelle. And she's very aware of that too. And so, and she's quite a slight woman. When she stands in front of all of them and has a go at them, telling them that these orgasmic convulsions are not good enough, it's so demeaning to them as well.
Mm.
And I think she's wonderful in those moments. And she's so, so good at standing up to the men in her life and just taking control of them so easily. This is the most ludicrous comparison. I remember Bane in The Dark Knight Rises someone says to him, like, I gave you money, what else do you want? And he just puts his arm on his shoulder and just says, you think that gives you power over me? Just, and all it is just putting his arm out. And that's it. And Isabella Huppert doesn't even need that. She's got eye. Like, yeah. She just slightly widen her eyes and you know you've lost already. I think she would win in a fight against Bane for sure.
She is incredible in this film.
Yeah.
She's magnificent.
Yeah, and best actress for sure for me. Better than Emma Stone. 100% better than Emma Stone.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, and she can sing. She just didn't need to. right, so let's take a look at the other people that are in Elle's life, because we forget this is also a mystery film. Mm-hmm. We have a masked man at the beginning, and so naturally we want to find out who that person is. And Elle is on that mission herself. There is the ex-husband, there is the best friend's husband, who naturally she's having an affair with, of course.
Yeah. It's a French film.
Yeah. There is the video game designer that fancies her. There is the video games designer who doesn't like her. There is the new neighbour. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning, it's like a Cluedo thing.
Yeah, I was thinking,
because you're given all the and you're given all these lovely little scenes, and you're thinking, yeah, it's definitely all of them.
Well, you kind of think, like, there's a scene where Michelle has, like, lunch thrown over her by a member of the public because she's obviously in the public eye. And part of me then just thought, maybe it is someone that just hates her for what her father's done. Maybe there's a revenge in that way. So yeah. it is a real mystery. You have no idea.
Yeah. And as I was watching it, I did think, you know what, if that scene just kind of happened at the start and then the rest of the film played out and we never actually saw who it was, I wouldn't be hugely against that either, because it is, a lot of it is about Michelle not defining herself by other people's actions towards her, and in particularly the sexual assault at the start, and that's really important. Not seeing the rapist could play into that, but then we actually do find out, and that's fine.
We do, but also, you know, even the sexual assault aside, and that's what kicks off the film, and that kind of mystery as to who that person is drives it. I think she is such an interesting character. The people around her are so interesting. Their lives would be interesting enough to see just like before this happened or way later, because it's just such a bizarre setup.
I think the relationships that she has are really interesting. Mm. Seeing her interact with other people and how she is with everyone, and how I think she's kind of the most powerful in all the relationships she's having.
Oh, she's the most powerful woman or person in any room she walks into.
Yeah. Even her friend Anna, she, like, obviously they have the business together and everything, but you can see that she admires her as well. Mm. That she kind of looks up to her.
And there is a scene in where they both share a bed.
Yeah.
And there is some sexual tension between them as well. And that's running through Michelle's interactions with almost anyone that she has in the film. And
that's quite interesting, actually, because that's probably with everyone bar her son. Mm. And her son is the person that she has a difficult relationship with, the only person she has a difficult relationship with. It's quite interesting to note that he's the only person that she doesn't have a sexual relationship with in some way.
Mm. I mean, we've got to be careful here, because we've got so many different characters that we need to introduce and their relationships to Michelle. Her son is a really interesting one. He's a bit of a wet flannel, really, isn't he? A lot of the people in this film are quite strong personalities, and we get that drama through their clashing and combining. And I think I can imagine if she is your mother, trying to perhaps deal with that a lot of the time must actually be quite hard, because she's so strong-willed all the time, and you can see that. That's either going to go one way or the other, and he's kind of collapsed under it. And
cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Is just completely bewildered by another strong woman in his life, who is his... Is it his girlfriend?
Girlfriend,
yeah.
And who is pregnant and making every decision for him, really. Mm. And you can see that Michelle isn't thrilled by this, but she takes lovely little swipes at her as well throughout. But she's not actively trying to tear them apart or anything.
Yeah, I think she says on a few occasions that she can't connect with her son, and her son disappoints her often by never sticking to anything. Mm. He's never kind of achieving what he could achieve, and she can't understand him at all. Yeah, so I think maybe it feels like it's got to a point with her son where she thinks, well, what's the point in trying to break him up with this girl, you know? Mm. Will it last? Does anything ever last with him?
But also I think kind of he needed a girl like that, like a bit like his mother, that will take charge and will, because he was a bit, like, flaky.
Yeah, he might have reached a point in his life where he's realised that he isn't sticking to anything, and so actually getting someone in his life that has drive and direction could sort him out a bit. And perhaps Michelle is a bit more accepting of that towards the end of the film. So I mean, there's so many, as we said, so many different relationships. Like, there's a moment in the film where someone actually photoshops Michelle's face onto the ogre sex scene that we see earlier in the film, and that becomes another layer to the mystery. It's pieced together in a way that you then think, oh, so whoever put the Photoshop on the ogre sex scene knows about the rape, because the film's been constructed in a way that we have the rape and then we have the ogre animation. So then when we see the two combined, we think, oh, so the person who knows about the rape is the person that put together this CG thing.
And also that she's been getting text messages and little things. It becomes, as the film goes on, it becomes apparent that this rapist isn't going to leave her alone. It wasn't a one-off act. He's sending her messages about her, about what happened to her. And so, yeah, when you do see the ogre thing, you think, oh, well, then it must be someone who works in her office.
And we are given these... some things to throw you off, some things to draw you in, of all these different people in her life. And gradually, you do, I think, in the same way that Michelle doesn't initially want to think about what happened, we do get these flashbacks to it throughout the film, which I was initially not so sure about. Because I thought in those first few moments it was so powerful to have it at the start of the film, and we know exactly what's happened in those moments. When it started doing the flashbacks, I thought, I feel like I already know what happened. Mm. But we're given a bit more information about her cat and about the door that was left open, and who's come through and why there are broken plates on the floor. And this sets up things for later on in the film as well. And I think that's also Michelle thinking back on it and actually thinking about it and giving it more time and accepting that it's actually happened.
And these are the things that show the cracks, that she isn't just able to go, okay, that happened, that's it, it doesn't bother me at all. Because naturally, of course, it does. And these little flashbacks are when she's thinking about it, or thinking about how she could have done things differently, and how she didn't have to be a victim, and her trying to process and understand what's happened to her. And I think it is important that we flash back, although it's every time it's really very difficult to watch.
Yeah, definitely.
It is. And there's a remarkable shot of her just in the bath.
Oh, right at the beginning?
Yeah.
Yes.
Which you'll know when you see it, but that's one of the most powerful images in the film, I think. With this film, because of Michelle's character and what happens to her, and how driven she is, and how much it doesn't affect her. Just how powerful she is through the film in all of her relationships. There's been a lot of discussion about this as a feminist film, whether this is pre or post or new feminist, and I don't think it ever truly defines itself as any of them. It's quite an objective film, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. I think it's because obviously she kind of takes control of herself and the situation she's in, you would have thought, yeah, this is a feminist situation. But also it's like she's not a perfect person. And I think a lot of time maybe the feminist thing is being mistaken as, oh, women are kind of like they should be perfect or something like that.
Yeah.
Or the characters should be, but that's not necessarily how it is. It's just making a character that's interesting and that you want to see, and that's they're not one way or the other.
Yeah, I think we get this picture of Michelle, and although like it's she's heroic, she's clearly quite flawed, and there are a lot of things that have happened in her life that have shaped her to become the person she is now, and she's not executing things in the most healthy way, but she's doing them in the best way that she feels possible.
Exactly.
And what in the way that she feels is the best way for her. And I think that's what the great thing about it is. And then it's defining people by their personal choices and their personal actions rather than those actions in a greater scheme of things about how everyone should act.
Yeah, I definitely think it says this is how Michelle is dealing with this situation and this is a way you can deal with what's happened to you. But there's no... Well, you know, we all know in this situation there's no perfect way. There's no right way to act. You just have to, you know, put things in place to help you get to a place of acceptance and understanding. And I think that's what she does throughout the whole film.
Yeah.
Jen, from... obviously with your kind of acting background, was there a moment kind of in this film where it just kind of clicked that this you're watching something great, you're watching something unique?
I almost think it's from that second shot in the bath where she's there. I think she's just magnificent throughout the whole film. She holds it. She's in almost every scene, every shot. She's so compelling, so complex. In everything, she just seems to be truly living that character and truly understanding what she's doing at all points and where it's coming from, even before the audience understands why she's doing things. Mm. Yeah. What did you guys think?
Well, I was going to say, we've talked, when I'm sure people listening to this who maybe haven't seen the film, they must be thinking it's about 10 hours long.
Yeah, it's true.
Because like, there are so many different things that we've... Oh, and her dad was a serial killer. And she's having an affair and she runs this video games company. And all of this. And... we've said so many different things that could be the whole plot of another film, and these are all bubbling under the surface of this film, and you look at her face and you would not have a clue. And I think that's amazing to watch, because you say that she's got to live that, and I'm sure as a great actress she does, and she gets right into that character, and part of that character is not living it, trying to live your life without having to.
She lives it in every single moment, doesn't she, rather than in... She can't live in the past because the past is so damaging to her, and so she's always just living where she is right then and there and dealing with the situation in front of her at the time, be that with her mother, who's a handful, her son, who's a wet fish, her ex-husband, her best friend, her neighbours, you know, her employees. She somehow manages to keep cool in all these situations.
Yeah, you can never tell what she's thinking, and I think that's amazing.
Yeah. Did either of you guys, were you on the episode for Things to Come?
No.
Oh, so that's Mia Hansen's love film from last year, in which Isabel Hopper plays a lady in her later years who's struck with some kind of conflict and drama in her life and kind of has to go on some level of existential crisis to figure out what to do next. And it almost feels like this film, but minus the rape. And even in her performance, it's almost like watching the same thing, but then with Elle you have that extra level of that did happen at the start of the film. And I'm just constantly reminded of the fact that you, as you're watching this film, there are scenes that are happening, you think you have to keep remembering what happened at the start of this thing. And that's remarkable. And the fact that her performance both hides that and shows that simultaneously, I think is superb.
Yeah.
I think this must be a hard film to come home from. Like, in the time she was shooting this. You know, it's such a complex character that such horrible things have happened to. It's quite a dark headspace to be in, I imagine. So I don't know how she found...
Well, I know it's struggled with kind of production and distribution, ultimately. I think it was maybe shot around 2012, 2013.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think... but I know it took a while. I think it's a tough film to try and get funding for. Yeah. Imagine trying to, like, we do our pitches at the start of each of these podcast episodes, and some of ours are a lot easier than trying to pitch something like this. So I'm not surprised that something to try and get money for would be very tough.
Yeah, just seeing it written down or seeing it spoken about, you can't understand the complexities and how nuanced the film is.
Yeah,
because obviously, like you said, everyone's calling it a rape revenge film, and I think, it's nothing like that.
No. To break it up, you get these lovely little comedy moments, and because she has this such expressive face and these lovely wide eyes that every so often she does open them up, and she's got such a lovely face, and I just crumble every time that she just will say something and then go, oh la la. I've got a badge on my jacket, and an I Heart Isabel Lopez badge, and I was getting lunch the other day in a French cafe, and one of the an older waitress actually walked past me and just went, ah, I love Isabel Lupin, oh la la. that was lovely, and I could just listen to her go oh la la all the time. It's so good. And I'm just reminded of a bit in the film where she leaves a restaurant and she's parked in front of her ex-husband.
Oh yeah.
And just purposely reverses into his car. And that's fantastic.
And then when she drives off and she says, oh, someone's taken your fender off or something like that. And then he's like, oh, it's really bad. She's like, it's not that bad.
And there are those little bits littered throughout the
film.
Oh,
yeah, like the stuff with her mother.
Yeah.
Her mother's dating a gigolo engaged to a gigolo, and she's just like despairing of her. It's hilarious.
Yeah, lots of bits to keep, because it's again the way that we've been talking about it, we sound like this is the most heavy depressing film ever, but again that's part of the amazing thing about this film, that it's not actually like that. There are these little bits that lift you out of it and give you hope and optimism as well.
Yeah.
Even down to the end of it, I think.
Because ultimately, it's not about the rape.
Yeah.
It's about her.
Yeah, that's, I think, the thing that it's trying to tell people mm-hmm. about sexual assault as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it treads that line. It really does.
Yeah, it does.
And I think it's very brave to make the film like that. But coming out of it the other side and being able to come out of it on the right side of that line is such an achievement. Right, so we should go into a little, there's not a huge amount of spoilery stuff on here, but there are a few third act revelations that we will touch on. So if you haven't had the chance, go and watch Elle whilst you can. Give us a pause now and then come back for a little discussion on the spoilers. Right, so people, what did we think? Did we expect the rapist to be who we thought it was?
I was not expecting that, but I think it was really interesting to be the person that it was, her neighbor, because of the whole relationship she kind of had with him, which was the flirtations and her feeling sexually attracted to him, and then him being the person that actually committed the rape.
Yeah, it's what made it all the more shocking and all the more confusing for Elle, as well as for us watching it. Because, like you said, there had been that sexual attraction, those sexual tensions, her rubbing her foot against him under the table at dinner, inviting him over to dinner because she fancied him, watching him with the binoculars. I just wasn't expecting it to be him at all.
Mm-mm.
And I can understand the level of confusion she must have felt to know it was him.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was in some way like almost a triple bluff as well, because it's like saying, oh, it's going to be this guy, but then you think, oh no, it can't be that guy because she fancies that guy, so it wouldn't be that guy, it would be someone who we don't expect.
Yeah.
Oh no, it is that person as well. And that's again part of the charm of this film, that you're constantly flicking between what you're thinking about every situation. And it was a really lovely reveal, because I don't think ultimately I was expecting it. I think I had played into the video game.
Yes, I really thought it was going to be the man that she asked to snoop on the others.
Mm.
Yeah, I thought that was...
And he almost had actually a little bit of a similar look to the neighbour with the dark hair and the kind of bigger lips and everything. And so I really thought it was him. And I thought that's when she was having a confrontation with him in the office where she had the power. Mm. Yeah, but to find out it wasn't him. Yeah. Shocking.
Yeah. And we also have the fact that her mum dies.
Yeah.
As well. Mm. So again, another thing for her to deal with. But this is, for her at this point, that's just... that's nothing, is it?
Well, this difficult relationship she has with her mother, where she actually has to say to a doctor, you know, is she just joking now? Is she just faking this? And the doctor's like, no, you can't fake a stroke, and she probably is never going to wake up. And even then, when you cut to Elle in the hospital room with her, she's sort of having a go at her mother and saying, like, you can't tell me what to do. Don't think I'm going to go and see my father because it's your death wish, blah, blah, blah. She doesn't even notice that her mum's having a cardiac arrest and then... dies.
Yeah. And then darkly comic again, the ashes.
Yeah.
Getting rid of the ashes is very funny.
Yeah.
And because I think, is she in sunglasses at this point as well? And she looks so cool. I think it's in Peter Bradshaw's review that he describes her in this performance as looking like she's wearing sunglasses even when she's not. That's very true. And then this moment where she's got the glasses on and she's in this lovely field and it looks like something out of Things to Come again, actually. And then it's she's got the urn with the ashes in. It's just like, I've had enough. And it's like windy and rainy and all the family's there. It's like, right, I don't care. Just chucks it. Dies if it's like an old can of Coke or something to get rid of it. I don't care about littering in the field, whatever. Yeah, she's giving it back to the earth. But that's a really great beat. And what else do we have?
Sorry. And it's the death of her dad, yeah.
Yes.
How does she even begin to deal and cope with all of these things? Yeah. So this is her father, who she's not seen since he went to prison, who implicated her in these terrible murders he committed and, you know, altered in her life drastically.
Well, that completely shaped her.
Yeah. And so she... is finally feels ready to see him after he's lost this appeals case for parole, and he gets notified she's coming and then hangs himself rather than sees her.
I know.
How do you even begin?
Yeah. And this is, and we're almost desensitized at this point because we've seen so many terrible things happen to her that when this happens again, which could be the entire plot of another film, and it's just given a handful of scenes here, you can't even begin to comprehend it. And she's so stoic through it as well, because so much has happened by this point that you just couldn't piece together trying to deal with that.
You're desensitised to it. She's desensitised to it. She's like, well, you know, what else is going to happen to me? I've been brutally raped. My mother's dead and now my father's dead.
Yeah.
She can't take on any more grief.
Yeah, yeah. And then we get to really the end of the film. And all of that has happened, and it's come out that she's been having an affair with her friend's husband. That's come out as well, of course.
Yeah.
Her son's girlfriend has had the baby. It's clearly not her son's as well.
A sweet moment when he kind of finally admits it's not his son, even though it's quite plainly obvious it's not his son, and he just sort of says, like, I would be a good dad. And he's kind of, that's all he's got to cling to, so he doesn't really care that the baby's not his. He can't lose that.
Yeah. Mm. And so then we get this Casablanca-y ending of her and her friend walking off after deciding, you know what, so much stuff has happened at this point, we might as well just be friends and carry on.
Yeah.
And move in together.
Yeah. And I actually think it's a really sweet ending.
Yeah.
It's quite romantic in a way as well. And I, as we touched on earlier, it's quite an optimistic, quite a hopeful ending. And you hope, for Michelle's sake, that is that's a stopping point, and that there, like, she can put a stop to what she's dealt with in these I don't know, couple of months, weeks.
It does kind of feel like that, because, you know, her dad has died, who was this reminder of all these bad things that happened, and she always had hanging over her that she should see him, and it was always being brought up in the newspaper. She was never allowed to forget it, and he's finally dead, so she can forget that.
Of course, her son has killed her rapist as well.
Oh yeah, her son has killed her rapist, so that's not happening to her anymore. And both her and her friend have let go of their sort of ex-partners, and they're gonna build a life together and be happy, hopefully.
Yeah,
I hope so. gosh. It's draining just talking about it, isn't it? Right, we should probably maybe wrap up the L discussion there. Let's have a quick look at Curzon Home Cinema and see what's available on there that we think would be worth having a quick chat about. The one that I'm going to recommend is, I've mentioned it a few times already, Things to Come, Mia Hansen Love's film. I think I've already done it as a Curzon Home Cinema recommendation already, but I can't resist it. It's so good. This is the woman who directed Eden, the 2014 film about French house music, and this is Isabelle Huppert in another starring role in another film with a cat as well. Which cat is worse? I think you'll have to figure that one out.
Ooh.
That's very good. And she got the Golden Globes, or was it the European Film Awards? It was a joint nomination for her acting.
Oh, great.
So it was Things to Come and Elle, and they are very similar performance of that kind of stoic woman just trying to plough through kind of late life drama, mm-hmm. and dealing with her mother as well. Very similar mother characters, really similar. So really great double bill. Jen, recommendation for yourself?
I'm going to recommend I, Daniel Blake. You've probably heard a lot about it, but it's now on Curzon Home Cinema, and if you haven't seen it yet, it is well worth the watch. It's moving and challenging. And yeah, we did a podcast on it a few weeks back, or months back now, so you can have a listen to that once you've watched it.
Yeah, and actually in our European Film Awards episode, you can check out Sam's interview with Paul Laverty, the writer of the film. So do try and find that if you get the chance. Daniela?
I'm going to recommend It's Only the End of the World by Javier Dolan. I really, really liked it. And again, a family kind of drama set in one place when the son comes back to see them after 12 years now being there. It's really nice, and it's all about performances and emotions and relationships.
Yeah, that is a proper melting pot as well. Mm. It's you do get hot just watching it, don't you?
Yeah.
Horrible. I think we covered that a couple of weeks back, but we've got Xavier Dolan on the podcast talking about that film, so do check that out. We also want to highlight other stuff that we've got in the cinemas at the moment that we think is worth checking out. Obviously, post-Oscars Moonlight, you've got to check it out whilst it's I know in America it's tripled the amount of screens that it was playing in, which is
amazing.
Brilliant to see. So please go and watch Moonlight if you can. And I touched on Logan earlier, kind of talking about James Mangold going back to more of an indie roots film, and it's more of a western than it is a superhero film. It's the closest that we're going to get to a superhero drama as opposed to an action film. I think it's really cool. And I don't think it's maybe as good as the Johnny Cash Hurt trailer that they made beforehand, which is amazing and is a great film in itself. It's almost as good as that, but it is very cool. And I think the final shot of Logan is up there with the best shots of any blockbuster of the last 5 or 10 years. It's immaculate. All right, so that brings us to the end of the show. Thanks a lot for joining us. Until next time, we will see you later. Say goodbye, Danny.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Jenna.
See you later.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.